Moments I wish I could take back. We all make mistakes. As we read in Ecclesiastes 7:20, there's not a person on earth who always does right and who never sins. In Romans 3, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Our consciences testify against us anytime we start thinking too highly of ourselves. Maybe it's harsh words we've spoken to our children, which we deeply regret, or maybe spoken to another loved one. Perhaps it's a wrong turn or lapse of judgment on the road that led to an automobile accident. It could be something as simple as missing a shot in the sports, a shot that would have won the game, or writing the wrong answer on the test when you knew the right answer. Some of our moments are fine, but some of them are not our finest moments. One of the things I regret most before I became a Christian was my senior prom. I was 17. And so consumed with myself and so insecure. And I ended up that night stealing my best friend's girlfriend from him right there at the prom. It was a horrible thing to do. And I phoned him years later to apologize when it occurred to me I really need to go back. But he was very hurt. I said, I suppose by now you've forgiven me for that stupidity that I did 25 years ago. And he said, well, what makes you think I've forgiven you? He was still hurting. Oh, I wish I could go back. Or I think of sometimes the disrespectful things I said to my father, or some of the activities, even criminal activities I took part in before I was a Christian, primarily vandalism, not evangelism. And I've wondered, wouldn't it be fantastic to go back in time, if time travel were a possibility? But I realized that if I went back to my senior prom, I would be 17. I wouldn't be a 65-year-old man who's a little bit more balanced and not so focused and on himself. Most likely, I would have done the same or worse, or at least something similar. Now, we need to own what we've done. And rather than being depressed, we can learn from the past. We can learn. This series we'll focus on things that I've done, but of course you could fill in the blank. We've all done these things. But the things that I've done in the name of Christ, that is, as a Christian, thinking that these decisions were somehow pleasing God. And that's a serious thing. I'd like to begin with my undergraduate days. I went to Duke University. It's in North Carolina in the United States. And I was there doing a degree in history. And I'm going to be sharing about those years, 1977 to 1980, for a few minutes now and then also in the second talk. When I went to Duke, I really didn't know what to do with my life. I did know that I was very interested in Christianity, and I had been reading a lot of books in the previous months. A couple of men knocked on my door in my dorm the second day I was at Duke. And even in this period of coming to faith, I was sharing my faith more and more. 7 weeks later, when I became a Christian, I was intensely evangelistic. I mean, the first thing I did after my baptism, my hair was still dripping wet. Back in my dorm, I basically knocked on every door I walked past. Well, yes, I did help people become Christians. There are quite a few over the years. But the rudeness, the badgering, the disrespect, as I see it now, was not excusable. And I look differently on those who opposed me now than I did back in 1977. I was one of those guys who enjoyed door knocking so much that sometimes, to take a break from my studies, I would just walk across campus to another dorm and just go door by door, inviting people to a group Bible study. A lot of them came. Some people probably pretended they weren't there. Occasionally, the door would be slammed in my face. But this wasn't a bad thing. But in my own dormitory, I would also knock the same doors week after week. And that's badgering. That led eventually to me being hauled before the dean of students and the minister to the university. There were about 5 or 6 people in the room, and I came, and I had invited my campus minister, and I thought, I'm being so bold here. And it was inspiring in a way. at least I was being opposed for doing something that in principle was good. I mean, I wasn't hurting people. I wasn't getting drunk. The university had a beer policy at that time, and they really pushed it. And I think I made some smart comment about, well, when you undo the beer policy, you know, pushing all the kegs, then I'll stop sharing about Christ. But when I look at it now, I think, oh, what arrogance there. When I say that I was insensitive, maybe I should give you an illustration. I was going on the campus bus. There was a shuttle between East Campus and West Campus. And usually there are lots of students. But when I got on this particular day, there was only one. And he was sitting halfway back on the right-hand side. And I thought, okay, I need to share with him. Now, if I were going to reach out to someone today, I would probably sit a row or two in front of him, and maybe not directly in front of him, but more so that I could turn diagonally and say, hey, how you doing? But what I did there is I pretended to be trying to figure out where to sit. I was walking down the aisle, and I thought, oh, is this seat here free? Oh, do you mind if I sit here? Right next to him. He was at the window. I had the aisle seat. And then, so you're trying to be cool and bring up the subject of your faith, but how rattled would most people not be if a total stranger came and sat next to him in that way? It's kind of hilarious, but it's true. I showed disrespect to one of my religion teachers. I majored in history, but I took 4 religion classes, and the last one I took, I remember very well, in Professor Bradley's class. He made some comment, and sometimes, it may have meant well, but sometimes it seemed to me he was belittling Christians. And I pushed back really hard, and I started saying a lot of stuff, standing up for Christ. And it was probably not all wrong, but I know that some things I was saying are not right from my perspective now. And this went on for the entire class. And not just that class, but the next time the class met, it was, again, only the professor and Douglas talking or arguing for the entire hour. I was walking out of the building, and one of the secretaries said, we've heard about what you did with Dr. Bradley. And I thought, oh, she's really inspired. But no, it was quite the opposite. She was quite angry. I felt vindicated. I felt powerful. And it would take years before my thinking on this would change. One thing I feel really bad about is the way I treated one of my roommates. Well, one of my roommates, the last one I had, I know I must have been overpowering, and he was a sensitive soul, because I went to one college reunion only. It was 20 years later, and I saw him, and I walked up to him, and really I wanted to apologize, but he was so rattled even to see me. I think it brought back these old memories. But what I wanted to share about one of my roommates was, he was interested in faith, but he decided after a while he didn't want to be involved in what I was doing in my church or my group studies. And so I thought, well, I'll be more subtle. I'll gently share my faith with him. I would do that by writing a scripture on a card, computer card, and I'll put that on the door, a new one each day, and he'll see it as he goes out. Of course, after a few weeks, there are quite a few of these cards. These scriptures that I had selected just for him, my goodness, not picking up on signals, social cues. I admit it. I was socially awkward, but it was more than that. There's a disrespect there. He lived in Atlanta, and I remember getting a letter from him at one point. He just was not very happy with me. I don't blame him. But we ended up moving to Atlanta decades later, and I reached out to him. By this time, he was a school teacher, very popular. Some of the kids in our church had him as their teacher. They really liked him. And I thought, okay, maybe I could connect with him, because I just want to say, Scott, I'm sorry. And I emailed him, and he didn't seem interested. I sent one more, and he said, really? No, not even briefly. I don't want to see you under any circumstances. So here we are. That was in 2006. This was, my friends... Wow, that was 27 years later, and still the hurt that I'd caused was there. I'm not blaming him, I'm blaming myself. Now, I value gentleness and respect. Who's going to harm you if you're eager to do good? Peter says. But even if you suffer for what's right, you're blessed. Don't fear the threats, don't be frightened. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience. I hope that's a familiar passage. That's from the middle of 1 Peter 3. And we often look at that passage and think, yes, I need to be prepared to give an answer. I need to know my stuff. But the preparation of which Peter speaks is not so much having an arsenal of Bible facts and clever arguments. The preparation is our interior disposition, that we're revering Christ as Lord, not giving in to fear. If you read that passage slowly, if you look at the Old Testament passages he's citing, you'll see this. Because when we're insecure, and I think I was very insecure in the past, when you're insecure, things come out wrong. We're not gentle, we're not respectful, and we don't even realize it. We fail to represent Christ when we don't honor him in the right way. You know, truth is not a weapon. The gospel is not a way to compensate for insecurity or low self-esteem. But I realized, reflecting long after this, that for me, knowing the Bible was a real rush. The scriptures were how I proved that I was important. It made me feel powerful. I remember we were studying Psalm 119. I was probably 2 years old as a Christian. And of course, I'd read it before, but one verse really stuck with me. The one where the psalmist says that he has more wisdom than the elders. He knows more than the older people. Because when you're young and technically still in adolescence, if you're an undergraduate, you're probably an adolescent, you have conflicted feelings towards the older generation and quite possibly towards your own parents. But the gospel isn't meant to compensate for the insecurity we feel because we're adolescents. Not at all. But I would freely admit that evangelism made me feel powerful. What does Paul say in Colossians 4? Pray, watch, be thankful. He says, pray for us too, that God may open a door for our message, so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I'm in chains. Now listen to this. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Well, that was what was sorely missing in my undergraduate years. He says, then make the most of every opportunity. See, I would skip to that, those words. Yes, I'm sharing with everybody, and I felt guilty if I didn't talk about Christ with everyone I met. Then he says, let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so you may know how to answer everyone. So what was missing, it wasn't that I was trying to use opportunities, it was the wisdom, it was the grace, it was really respecting people for who they were and interacting accordingly. Well, these are evangelistic mistakes I've talked about in this first talk, or you could say sins. Many people came to the Lord, but that doesn't justify my attitude or my behavior towards those who did not. These are moments I wish I could go back. I wish I could undo. There's clearly no way to do that, but hopefully we learn from our mistakes. Next time, I'll still talk about the undergraduate years, but I'd like to share some of the dumb decisions I made, thinking they would make me more effective for the Lord, when in fact they did just the opposite. Thank you for listening. God bless.